Oh, I didn't mean to hit it again. Shit. Oh, well, there we go. Fake audience laughter. Hello and welcome to episode 332 of the Hooniverse podcast. I'm not going to introduce ourselves first because first things first, Ron, have you seen Top Gun yet?
No, man. I'm geeked. Everyone's talking about it. And our buddy Anthony texted me, I guess, leaving the theater, like, you have to go see Top Gun this weekend. So I will get around to it.
I saw it this afternoon in IMAX at the Spectrum. Oh, yeah. And I got to say, right away, sucked in, perfect. The intro is almost like a redo of the original intro, but it didn't matter. The music was there. The action was there. It was awesome. And there was even a part towards the end of it where I didn't get emotional, but I could feel feelings. I could feel feelings. That the movie kind of takes me back because in 1986, when the first one came out, my dad was in the Navy. I was 6 years old. That's when Miramar was still a naval base. It's been a Marine base for years. And we used to go food shopping on the base. So we would drive by Fighter Town USA and all that stuff. So, like, I've always been.
No shit. How long are you guys out here?
8 years when I was a kid.
Sick.
Yeah. So I've actually lived on this coast longer. Now counting that time when I was a young one, I was still born on the East Coast and then went back to the East Coast and, you know, all that stuff. But those were some formative early years where, you know, the F-14 Tomcat and all that shit, and man, it sucked me in. So this movie was like a major nostalgia hit, and it was awesome. The flying scenes were incredible. I mean, Tom Cruise is, you know, outside of movies, we can all have our various opinions of him, but in the films, the dude gives his all, and his movies are incredible.
Sure. So,
and I actually don't really like Miles Teller that much, the actor, and he was great as Goose's son. So it was cool.
Okay.
Jennifer Connelly is back.
I don't know him well at all, but I don't know. He's just, I feel like he's just like a polarizing face, even.
They did a good job of making him look like Goose's kid, but also you know who he is, though, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, okay, from Whiplash and all that. But Jennifer Connelly was in it, and she still got it. So it was good. But, Mr. Ron Baugh, I'm using that to transition into our first topic. Since Top Gun's a throwback, our first car is quasi a throwback.
Okay.
See what I did there? We're going to talk about a DeLorean.
Svelte. Slick.
There's a new DeLorean that was just shown off. Did you see the pictures of this thing?
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yes, the pictures, the renders are beautiful. Right. It's called the DeLorean Alpha 5. It's the people who bought the rights to the company years ago, based in Texas. They're trying to, you know, do stuff years and years and years ago. I think they might have come out with some for sale, but they created an electric version.
So it's that same DeLorean motor company that's basically been, I don't know, like Restomodding. Like original DeLorean?
Yes. As far as I know, yes. It's still them. Okay. I think they still have an office in Huntington Beach, oddly enough. Okay. Unless that's just like a repair shop. But they years and years ago at the New York Auto Show, I remember they showed off an electric DMC 12. So the original DeLorean, but electrified. And that was neat, but it was, you know, it was kind of a cool idea. They were gonna sell them for like $100,000, which at the time was like, oh my God, so much money. And in today's market, they'd be like, it's $450, you know, like something stupid. But this new one, I'm going to pull it up so we can see it because, yep, let me just share it. I'm like a boomer when I'm sharing this shit. All right, pull it up. That is the DeLorean Alpha 5, looking at the Motor One website. So, gullwing doors, four-seater, Ital design, handle the design, which is why it looks cool. They're going to shoot for 0 to 60 in under 3, and they're going to shoot for a range of a minimum of 300 miles, which are just magic numbers in the EV space. So they're going to reveal it at Monterey Car Week on August 18th. So apparently there's going to be a version in the flesh to show off. But
so do you think this car doesn't exist yet. These are just 3D renders.
Yes. Okay. That's what I would believe here. That's what I would believe. But the design is cool.
What the fuck does it have to do with DeLorean?
Right. And are we ever going to see, I mean, besides the doors are the only thing, but that's, I mean, you know what, if they need to reinvent the name, I get it. So they own the rights to the name. So that part doesn't bug me. But I mean, are we ever going to see one of these on the road?
That would be great. It'd be cool. But like, I just don't get that. Like the DeLorean name, like it to me, it doesn't tug at any heartstrings. Like, you know, John DeLorean's name has kind of been tarnished, you know, with his embezzlement and fucking his scandals. Like, I don't think there's anybody that's like, oh man, we have to reinvent the DeLorean. We got to bring back the prestigious nameplate DeLorean. Like, it could have been any other name, and maybe I'd be more accepting of it personally. But I mean, car's beautiful. If they have funding and they can make this thing a reality, awesome. But I just don't get. Like the design, the name, like none of it,
right.
Like triggers or like excites me in any way.
I'm just trying to see. I'm not trying to cut you off, but I feel like I got something in my teeth, and I don't want to. I might right there. I think there's something right there, but I think we're just gonna have to roll with it because I'm not stopping for toothpicks. So I'm gonna talk like this.
Blur those frames.
Yeah. So if this car gets made, I'll be impressed. Obviously, it's going to have a stupid price tag. It's going to have all these are questionable numbers.
They mentioned pricing?
No. They're still like in the very much claiming stage. Maybe they'll say something at Car Week because that's where they would have the people who could be in a position to buy it. Right. Like, I think one of the best sales days for Aston Martin is when they host stuff at Pebble Beach. Like, they literally close deals at Pebble Beach. So maybe it'll work out for DeLorean. So we'll see.
I mean, that's a brilliant sales strategy to get a bunch of drunk, rich assholes in it. And I'm sorry, I'm friends with a number of those assholes, but they're admittedly assholes. You know, get them together in a room and one up at each other and just like, oh, I got to have the one of one spec. And like, you got that. I got to get this. Like, you know, it definitely serves a purpose. And that's why it's still around and it's still supported. What the
fuck? What was that? What was that? Oh yeah. What was that? You have a gasser drag race outside?
I don't know, dude. There's been a ZL1 Camaro that's been like parked outside my building the last couple nights for like a little like parked illegally for like 15 minutes at a time, and it's fucking loud, it's cam, so I don't know if it was that or what, but that sounded healthy.
It's your boy Zach trying to get your attention.
It actually could be, but his car's not cammed, and it doesn't sound like that. It doesn't rev like that. Who's he got? A Grand Sport Corvette.
Nice. All right. Enough of the car that's not real yet. I spent a week with a real car, a real expensive car, speaking of rich assholes. Not that I am one. I was driving one, a car that one might drive. The Bentley Flying Spur Hybrid. Plug-in hybrid. It's neat. The idea of it is cool. 536 horsepower is nice. It's just right there near what the V8 does.
Please talk about that, because that was disappointing when I read the script today and realized it was a V6 car, not a V8 or V12. I had no idea.
So I didn't know until it arrived what engine was in the front, because I didn't read up on it before it showed up, and then I'm starting to take my notes. What's that?
It is a V6, yeah.
It's the 2.9 liter. It's that family 2.9 liter. And it's the wrong engine for the car. Mm-hmm. Cruising around in EV mode is amazing. You get, you know, 20 plus miles of range because it's a plug-in hybrid. It's you know, you really put some juice into it and you realize how nice it's built, you know?
Right.
Even with the audio system not pumping, but the name audio system is sick. But the seats are great. It's just, there's a little bit of road noise. There's really no wind noise. It's just quiet. It's very super luxury feeling. And then if you dip into the throttle, what's that?
What size wheels are on it?
22s. But, if you dip into the throttle and wake the engine up, because you can run it in hybrid mode, full EV mode, you can run it in just force it to save charge for later on, and that engine comes to life. And it's just, it's a fine engine in other applications. I think on its own, it's like 410 horsepower. It is not a Bentley engine. The car doesn't sound good when the engine is on. It's harsh, it's buzzy. It's just like, it kind of kills it. I mean, it still gets up and goes. Which is amazing for a 5,600 pound car. It handled well. Yeah, it's heavy as shit. The crazy thing is too, they had to ditch a lot of the handling stuff to fit the electric stuff. So it doesn't have, like the regular gas car has active anti-roll bars. This doesn't have that. The regular car has rear steering. This doesn't have that. It still handles way better than you would think a car like this should in the canyon or like on a road. You know, it's like, there's just a little bit more lean now, and but it's like a big gangster ass car, and it handles okay. I mean, chassis these days are pretty amazing.
What is EV mode like though? Is it like, is it, how much horsepower torque does it make in EV mode? Like, is it just for creeping around, or is it, you can, is it quick in EV mode?
The electric motor on its own makes almost 300 pound feet of torque. So, you know, you get off the line, no problem. And you, in EV mode, you can go up to 80 miles an hour.
Oh, wow.
So you could cruise down the freeway, you know, with a charge. It's good to go. It's very usable EV mode. It's not like as soon as you touch the throttle, it switches to gas. No, you can totally drive around. Like if you have charge, you can drive around all just in EV mode the whole time. And it's really cool. And then if you push through it, then you can kick the engine on, or you could put it into sport mode and force the engine on. And it runs as, you know, just like a dual mode hybrid. Then there's a comfort mode, custom mode, and then there's multiple EV modes, depending on what you want to force the battery to do. But it's, I mean, it's not behind me. No, my Jag's behind me. It's outside. It's cool. The paint's sick. It's funny. There's a pop. What's that?
You still have it?
Yeah, it goes back tomorrow. I extended it a little bit because I needed to get some more stuff. I'm going to see if I can actually, if I have it in my Instagram. I have one picture of it that I can pull up. Let's see. I want to do this like this, get this.
I never saw the interior of it. Is it like?
Oh, it's like a dark blue with red stitching.
Sick.
Yeah. Let's see if I can make this bigger and do...
Oh shit! I didn't even realize it was that bright color. For some reason, I thought it was an 80 car. Damn, that's sick.
Yeah, it's sick. So it's light, and then like all the trim is black. It looks sick. And then I'm glad the wheels aren't black though. And it was funny today. See the quad like headlights up front. Some dude at a stoplight. Because I had my blinker on, and he rolled his window. I was like, "Hey man, one of your lights is out." I was like, "Oh, thank you." And I'm like, "What?" And I turned the blinker off, and the light came back on. I was like, "Bro, you don't know about that Bentley life." I mean, but that's like every car with daytime running lights these days if they're in the blinker. So I don't know. I'm trying to go over my mic stand. That's not gonna work.
Level up, bro.
No, I appreciate you looking out, but I don't need you. Now, so the car is $210,000.
That's it? Honestly, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying that, but I mean, that's got to be, I hate to say it, but base spec. I mean, I imagine most Flying Spurs are 300 plus.
No. It's the Mulsanne is the one that is the one that's usually.
Yeah, you still make the Mulsanne?
I think it's done now, but that was the King of the Hill. The base price of a Flying Spur is $198,000. But this one had like a Mulliner package.
With what motor combination? What's base spec?
I would assume that's a good question. It's probably the V8 is probably the base spec car. I would have to imagine let's see if I'm on the configurator. You know what? Shit, we can share this. We can share this shit too. Hold on. Share it all. So I'm on the configurator, and so they have some like pre-built ones. Flying Spur. I just want Flying Spur.
Sexy sedan, man. That shit looks so
good. It is a good-looking car. Yeah. So the V8 doesn't give me prices yet. No, V8 or hybrid.
Ford Litra.
Litra. Yeah, the Litras. I wish it would just. Your configurator sucks. You know that. I don't want to. I don't want to go through this anymore because it's going to. It wants
me. They want you in their mother showroom specking.
Yeah. Right. Oh, it doesn't give me. Oh, you know what? Holy it doesn't shit. Give you prices.
Of course not. Just everything, every option, more than you can afford.
Right. Yeah, pretty much. So I think the V8, a base V8, is like 198. This one's 210. I think this car might be more than 210, though, because it says 210 approximately. That must be the base price, because then there's a list of options. And one of the options is the Mulliner spec package, which is like the blacked out trim, leather headliner, metal pedals, metal gas cap, and the wheels. And it's $20,000.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's no way you're buying a $200,000 Flying.
Yeah, this one's like, probably closer to like 260.
If you poverty spec it, maybe. But like, they're gonna option that. Like, every dealer's gonna option like crazy. Like, if they're gonna order a car, it's gonna be fucking.
I bet.
You know, $60,000-$100,000 worth of options.
I bet they don't order cars though. I bet they like sit down. You know.
I mean, the easiest sale is a car that's in stock.
That's true. But that is true.
But it's also so hard to get cars, and with production being so limited, I wouldn't argue that 90% of the cars that are sold are spec'd by owners.
I would like to find that out. I might have to email Bentley and ask. And I know they said when they announced the hybrid that 50% of Bentley owners said, yeah, I want one. So, because there's a crazy...
In the past, I've ordered cars, Bentley, Lamborghini, Rolls Royce for, you know, the companies or the bosses that I worked for. And that was unique. Like 10, 15 years ago, that was like, oh, like, you know, like it was like 1% shit to order a car. Right. Typically you just go and buy whatever they had on the lot, but the model's completely changed in the last 15, 20 years. And now it's like, if you don't order a car, you won't get a car.
Yeah. That's true. That's a good point. I would like to, I want to email them though and find out what the deal is with that, because now I'm curious. But speaking of stuff in our price range, or stuff you would think would be in our price range. So I think I've talked about this a couple of times. I've got old Mustang on the brain. I even emailed Zach Bowman to be like, hey, if you ever sell it, you know, let me know. And he texted me back right away. He's like, make me an offer. I just sent him a picture of the Jag, and he just sent like back a laughing gif. And I was like, no, I know, which is an appropriate response, Zach. But his car is the reason I've been thinking about them so much.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. If you're in his position, I would consider that trade.
Yeah.
Is he in California though?
No, he's in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay. So it doesn't like the CARB certification.
No, it doesn't matter.
It
is no bearing for him. No. And a Mustang is like brain dead of a car compared to a Frankenstein pseudo-British, pseudo-American this thing. So I posted this on Hooniverse.today, Hooniverse.com. This is the best price I've found on Craigslist recently. This car, before I pull it up, it's a 289 V8, 4-speed. And the asking price is $7,300 or best offer. Now that sounds like a good deal, doesn't it? Hold up. Let me show you the car.
Like, why are we not in this dude's driveway right
because
now?
Because this is why.
Checking this thing out.
It has no glass except quarter windows. It has no interior. Let's see if the ad's still up.
Nothing?
It has like no. It has back seats.
Nope. Wow.
It didn't show up on this side yet.
I mean, it looks clean and straight. I mean, it's not... Is it painted?
It's like, looks like it's primered.
Right.
So, because it's
the Shelby bumper.
Oh, hold on. Let me go to the ad. That's what I wanted to do.
The fact that it's got chocks tells me that it doesn't have an emergency brake.
Yeah.
We don't trust.
It's got no lights. I mean, I know those are easy things to fit, you know, lights and, but that's the front.
I mean, have you priced flashing lights? Lights, I'm sure you get some
lights.
LEDs
you don't even need LEDs. Halogens are nothing. 7-inch rounds all day long. That's the inside of it. It has a back seat.
What happened to the interior?
I mean, I think this was just, they were in the middle of doing stuff, you know? And I mean, the engine clearly.
Have frames that you could drop off in an upholster. Does it start? Does it run? I mean, there's no.
It says car does not run. It's non-op. It's pink slip. It's a 100. It's a 100% project, and it's $7,300. This is a $2,000 car. You know?
Not anymore.
Clearly.
I mean, I think that car would sell for probably $4,000 to $5,000, right. But
still.
I mean, that's way more of a project than you want to take. And you don't need two fucking complete stripper projects.
But that's where we are right now, and that sucks. I mean, maybe in other parts of the country, there's some Mustangs out there, but then I'm dealing with rust, and I don't want to fuck with that. Right. There's a reason I look around here. But that sucks. So if anybody out there has a line on a Mustang that makes sense, let me know.
I want to go back to Atlanta next month. You know, I was just there last weekend, and
we got to rep our cities. Okay. All right. We're doing this.
Okay, we got current World Series champions, possible NBA.
It's going to be a tough battle.
Yeah, totally. It's gonna be a tough battle. Series starts tomorrow. Whew. Final starts
tomorrow. Curry tomorrow.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I don't envy.
No. Are you going back to Atlanta?
Because, well, I mean, I'm going back for a number of reasons, but when I go back, one of the things I want to do is knock on the door of one of my neighbors who has a 65 Mustang Fastback that has not moved since 1990. It's under a carport. It was red. It was chalky as fuck. It was dusty as fuck when I started it. My grandfather and I started inquiring about it in like 1995. Oh, shit. Like, you know, we thought it would be a good project then. And the lady that owned it was a widower. It was her husband's car. And I remember in like the last time we stopped and inquired, I got my grandfather to go by because he's like, you know, he was like the cop of the neighborhood. Like everybody right. knew him, like he was well respected in the community. So, you know, I knew she wouldn't pay any attention to me, like some punk kid stopping by like, hey, I want to buy your car. So, I got him to go by and she knew him and like, you know, was totally receptive, but she was like, oh, I just saw that one sold for $50,000. So, I think I want $35,000 for it. And it's like, lady, that car has not started, driven, moved in 25 right. years. Like, you've got to make some concessions here. And, like, you know, you've got to understand that, like, what – it's not going to take $15,000 to make this a $50,000 car. And the car is still there. Now it's under a tarp. And I just want to go by, like, this lady, unfortunately, like, I have to say, like, she has to have right. passed. So it's got to be, you know, like her children or grandchildren that live in the house now. And, you know, I just want to go by and see the car because it can't be rusted because, like, it's not in a field. Like, there's, you know, it's not subject to rain. It's covered. Like, it's got to be clean and mostly original. Like, it hasn't moved since the 90s. And the last time I saw it in, like, the 2000s, like, the interior was all there. I mean, it could be rodent infested, yeah. but I know it's not rusted.
Right.
But hopefully, you know, somebody in that household would be a little bit more reasonable nowadays and recognize it for what it is and just realize that like they could use the space more than they could use, you know, the money and they're not about to restore it themselves. Right. So I really want to work on acquiring that car just because, you know, it's something that has been like a target of my and my family's desire for like 25, 30 years now. So,
well, keep me posted on that.
I will check it out.
That sounds great. What are your speakeasy updates? I love this part.
And well, you already know, cause we tried to coordinate a meetup over there like several times this weekend and for different reasons, I just didn't make it in. I mean, it all adds up to me being just a lazy sack of shit, but, updates are, and that we can talk about now, Jason Whipple sold his R32 and bought an 85 GTI. And it's Mars red, so it fits the color scheme. Like all the cars that are long termers in the speakeasy are
red, R32 GTR.
He sold his R32 Mark IV Volkswagen R32.
I thought you said he sold an R32 for a GTI, and I was like, what?
Well, he didn't trade, and so I don't know that it was even money.
No. Like I thought you were talking about like Skyline.
Okay. Right, I know. But yeah, we're not talking about anything of that value or rarity. But he sold that. I don't know if I spoke on this last week, but Vin sold his
Oh yeah, we talked about that one. Yep.
It's still in the garage, but it's waiting for transport. And he picked up an Evo 9 MR that has like cams and like full bolt on and shit. And it's white, so it also fits the color scheme. But I mean, I just went over yesterday for the first time in like a week, and I just kind of detailed the Tahoe, took some pictures. I absolutely plan on listing that thing for sale. There's a couple other things that I want to do to it. I have extra parts laying around, like some LED headlights. I have like bumpers and grills and stuff, and I want to just play around and mix and match parts and like see kind of the final form that I wanted, because I have a set of 20-inch rotiform that I want to put on it, and doesn't necessarily coordinate with the chrome bumper and the chrome grill. So I want to change a couple things out just so I can see, you know, kind of my vision for the truck, but it'll, you know, I could easily return it to the way that it looks right now. So I'll probably do that this weekend, and then I'll list it for sale, and like, you know, I'll list it for two different prices, you know, with this setup or with that setup, and it's easily transferable, you know, either way. If you want both, like, that'll be another price. So that's pretty much all we got going on over there, but you know, it's still serving its purpose, and you know, keeping our cars clean and out of harm's way.
That is, I love that place. And even though you didn't want me to come see it, me to come see it this weekend, I'll.
That is not the case, but I didn't go over there myself, and I felt like a lazy sack of shit. I really wanted to ride in.
I know.
In the bit.
I know.
Really,
I was ready to roll over there, even though I really want to bring my Montero over there so I can meet those fools in the garage nearby, because I have questions. But we'll plan that.
I mean, maybe this Friday or Saturday, because I'm down to go over there Friday and Saturday, and they work.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Maybe we can do something on Friday. That might be good. I got to look at the calendar. I'm supposed to go to the Electrify Expo press days, but I don't want to. Okay. Jumping over to questions. Start with Instagram. Cooley156. What is the proper way to wave from your car? I've forgotten how to do this, and I wave like Forrest Gump to Lieutenant Dan. Funny enough, so do I. But I don't usually wave to people. And you know what's funny? Yeah, I do. I do that. I like hands on hips and everything. My wife gives me shit about it, but she's right, and it's funny. You know what's funny? If I'm driving a Jeep product, like a Wrangler product, I feel like no one in California does the Jeep wave anymore, which is weird. I get.
No.
Jeep wave is just like Jeep, just right. Wrangler. It's just like, hey, what's up? Hey, what's up? It's like a ubiquitous thing nationwide, and I feel like it's kind of died in California. I did get a wave from a Jag owner the other day, which gave each other a little.
Nice. I was going to say, I feel like that's a thing amongst any enthusiast owner group. Like, you know, when I was driving that Gladiator, like, I noticed a few people waving at me, and I was just like, like in Jeeps. And I was like, this isn't me.
Shit. That's
but
funny.
Like, Mustang guys, Corvette guys, I'm sure Ferrari and Lamborghini guys have their own thing. That's,
they just
much
wave
more obnoxious,
their wallets
but,
at each other. No, they do this. Yes. They're like, hi. Yeah. Hi,
right,
Keith.
Right.
Look at me.
Or just fucking piss out of their shit.
Jake Dupcara, would you rather spend a weekend in a rooftop tent or a Kyrie Irving Nets jersey? Fuck Kyrie. You know the answer to this one. You're asking that because of my stance on rooftop tents. I don't want a rooftop tent for my own vehicle. I will happily borrow vehicles that have them. I was recently offered today the chance to spend time with another Land Cruiser 80 with a Go Fast on the roof, 40s with no lift, which is insane. And I would happily spend a night in a rooftop tent. Fuck Kyrie, I reiterate. Crazy ass. Midnight Dory, what wheels should I put on a C6 Corvette narrow body? Having a hard time deciding. Ron, this is you.
We have a brand called Cray that's specific to Corvette, and we continue to do wheels.
Okay,
Cray, C-R-A-Y.
That's
it. Big Cray. Yeah, I mean, there's a number of styles in that brand that are specific to Corvette, take, you know, factory hardware and shit, like perfect offsets, like not factory offsets, but I would start there. That's the easiest recommendation. I mean, there's plenty of brands that make, you know, custom one-off, you know, bespoke custom wheels for them, but
it really is something that really is Craig
in the box.
Yeah. I just pulled it up because there's a picture of a C8. Maybe I can find some wheels for my brother. Nice. All right. Now my brother has a C8. If I didn't mention that on the podcast, I know Ron knows. There you go, Midnight Dory. Check out Cray, C-R-A-Y, because they Cray. Evan J. Cruz, do you still love the Transit Crew as much as you did in your video review? Yes. If I was building a van life van, it would be a Transit Crew because you get the two rows of seating and then the cargo area instead of one row and then the cargo area. Because I need that second row for my daughter. And it'd be a good place to have my dog sit if we were back there too. The dog could go further in the back. Yes, Transit Crew rips. I wish someone at Ford would give me a SEMA build. I've always wanted to be one of those guys that reach out to do a SEMA build.
I've done it. I've done it twice. Yeah. I could connect you with the phone. I mean, it's really not that hard. You just have to. Well, I don't know if they do it anymore, the Dollar Car program, you have to submit a proposal and fucking knock their socks off with
how your fucking concept is. All I do
is... The last time I did it, though, my concept was so fucking sick that they fucking stole it and gave it to somebody else.
Wow.
Yeah, I wanted to do an expedition. I was like, we could... And I won't...
This was like, who the fuck is Funkmaster Flex?
Since the, you know, the last like refresh of the Expedition, whatever it was, must have been 2017 or 2018, I submitted a proposal to Ford to basically build the ultimate like track day hauler. So an Expedition that was lowered on wheels, obviously, you know, tuned with pullouts, you know, in the bed, you know, for all your tools and everything,
like,
you know,
like a decked style storage.
Exactly. And along with GT350, and I wasn't trying to get both cars for a dollar, but I just wanted the Expedition. I was thinking about buying a GT350, and I was just like, you know, we could coordinate this like trailer with the same wheels, you know, basically the same wheels on all on the truck, the car, and the trailer. And I was going to build a GT350 to match, and they ended up basically I didn't get any of the vehicles. But they basically took my concept and gave it to another. It was basically a manufacturer that builds body kits for Ford for their factory cars. Like they're not necessarily Ford performance accessories, but whatever their like, you know, in-house like aftermarket options are. They granted them an F-150 and a Mustang GT or EcoBoost, and I ended up making the wheels for all three vehicles, for the wheel, for the truck, the Mustang, and the trailer. And I was just like, this is
not what I planned.
This is, you know, flattering, but it would have been fucking way cool if you had just given me the shit, because this is my concept from the beginning. But case around, that's the way shit goes. And, you know, it was cool to be a part of it. What's super funny is that I just saw that truck driving by my work last week. Yeah, it's a lowered silver crew cab F-150. And I was just like, that looks familiar. And you like, you don't see those trucks lowered, especially not in Orange County. Like, so it slammed on like 24-inch Forgiatos and it fucking cruised by. And I was just like,
that's funny. All my pitches consist of is tweeting at people till they pay attention to me. And that's why they don't work.
They have a specific like process. And it, you know, you can get it from the SEMA website, but I don't know if they've done it in the last 2 years. And now that they pulled out of SEMA,
I'd have a better chance of pitching them for like Overland Expo next year, honestly. And I want to do a full like van life, mountain bike storage, blah, blah, blah. And I also wanted to talk to Mountune about just chipping it because it's that 3.5 V6 and 400 horsepower in the blink of an eye. At least in my head. Commander 2v6, recommendations to keep wheels safe. Is there a style of lock that works better than others?
Gorilla.
What is that? Explain.
Gorilla is, you know, I mean, it happens to be our in-house brand, but it's also just like the most respected name in wheel lugs and locks and, you know, just wheel.
I don't know a lot.
So they got. They've got a lock solution for basically
how to. I don't know. Here's a chance to, if you wouldn't mind educating me. What's the deal with like how do aftermarket wheel locks work?
Wheel locks basically have a unique kind of spline pattern. So like each one like has instead of you know a hex, you know a standard hex head, they have like a uniquely shaped key that fits only one of those lugs or bolts on the wheel. And that makes it basically impossible to steal. Cause like if you have a generic, you know, lug set, you can take off four out of the five lugs. Right. But then you get to the key and you're going to struggle if you don't have, or if you get to the lock, you're going to struggle if you don't have the key. You know, if thieves were smart, they'd break into the car and find the key in the glove box or wherever. But like, you know, thieves don't have time for that shit. So it basically just slows down the process and it's a deterrent in that way, because if a thief is to run up to five cars in a parking lot or on a street and like, you know, they have custom wheels or wheels, factory wheels that are valuable, you look and you realize, fuck, this one has a key. Like, I'm not going to break into the car, risk the alarm going off, search through the car, hope to find the key, like spend all that time. So it's just like, all right, that's a hassle. I'll go to the one that doesn't have a lock. So wheel locks from Gorilla, like,
I'm looking too. I'm just clicking through, and there's like different shapes, manufacturer specific ones,
right?
Different colors, and wow, it's one specific to the Krager. Like, it's interesting. Okay, neat. Yeah. Lug bolt locks too. They do lug bolt locks too. If you have lug bolts,
exactly. Bolts or nuts, but that being said, I've never had wheel locks on any of my cars because my wheels have always been super unique, and or I've had one finish or a completely different style on each side. So, you know, that's another deterrent, but I mean, that's just some like inside baseball shit. It's just like, if you have two different wheels on a car, like, fuck, like, you know, a thief
Who is this guy?
Defeated. Like, what the fuck is this? I'm never going to be able to sell this.
There you go. Gorilla. That dude, Pasha, heading back east this summer, Block Island, P-Town, Ogunquit. Yes, I am heading back east in like 2 weeks, actually.
What are those names?
Block Island is a place in Rhode Island. P-Town is Provincetown down the Cape. Okay. And Ogunquit is an amazing town in Maine. And I'm going to none of those places, but I am going to flying into Boston. Got to pick my mom up in New Hampshire. Going to drive down to, I'm actually staying at Callahan's place for a few days too.
Yeah.
Nice. One of Ron's coworkers is a mutual friend, and I've rented his house before.
Is he including the,
I don't know. I told him to, but I don't know if he's going to. What kind of car is it?
Biagini Passo. It's like Italian bodied, but like VW.
Here, I'm going to pull up Dobbins.
And it was smart. Star of the show in our booth at Volks Auto Fair or whatever.
I gotta pull up Sam Dobbins. Oh god, this thing's ridiculous.
Silly car.
Yeah,
I'm trying to find
the right one.
But it's
that one's a
silly ass car. But it's got an actually pretty dope interior. It's like all Recaro, all blue. It looks almost like his plate is adventure or something.
Hold on, let me share this because the car is sick. The car is so cool.
Yeah, I didn't think so until I actually rode in it and
this thing
experienced it.
Oh, look at his little Rotiform deal back there too. Is that another? Oh, this is all Sam's. Sam's a great photographer. So if we go back, here's like a video of it so you can see. That is so cool. Those wheels look good on it. Yeah. So we'll see.
On the wheels, it's way cooler now that it's on the wheels. Before, I was just like, bro, what the fuck did you buy?
He's a hardcore VW guy, though, right? Yeah, okay.
Totally. All those guys are. They're like nerds of the VW community.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's there. I'm hoping my dog stops barking. But I'm also – I think my father-in-law's dune buggy is essentially done, so I'm also going to drive that. Speaking of Volkswagen stuff, because that's a chassis and engine, basically a pan from a Volkswagen – bug and the engine and all that shit and some unknown like I think what the hell it's like a I didn't realize that New England back in the day was a hot spot of kit cars. There were so many kit car companies in New England back in the day. It's weird. And this was one, I think this one was called Yeah. Car, K-A-R was one of them. I think Wildcat, I think, is the model that my father-in-law has. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm going to try to drive it, and I'll get video of it. Twitter, at JPasillo, JZX71. What are the next batch of collectible cars? I think there was a this isn't my answer, but I'm going to tell you there's a funny story in the New York Times. There's a story in the New York Times. Lynn Woodward pointed it out to me because a journalist friend of hers wrote that those who wanted Defenders and have been priced out of Defenders because Defenders are bonkers, the thing they should turn to are first-gen Monteros, which is hilarious to me. So I could make an argument that vintage off-roaders are collectible, but they've been collectible for years. The funnier part was they interviewed someone else in this article who I don't know. And this person says they've been hunting cars for clients. And this person thinks that they could see as high as 25 grand for a clean Gen 1 Montero, which that person is high. That person is high. My car is not clean, but my car is nicely equipped and it's maybe worth 10. You know, and I wouldn't sell it for under 30 because I don't want to sell it.
Right.
Because yeah, I don't want to sell it.
You can't replace it.
But if someone came to me and was like, I'll give you 30, I'd be like, here's the keys. Enjoy your ride. have fun. You can keep all the shit in it. I don't care. You're stupid for buying this. But the next batch of collectible cars, because it's not vintage SUVs, those are already collectible. Here's a weird answer. Because I can't think. Because Radwood is already a thing. You know, that's vintage electric vehicles. Like the first EVs. Like what if there's a cottage industry for like, oh, everybody has these now. I'm going to be a hipster. I want a first gen Nissan Leaf. You know, like some weird shit. I could be totally wrong. I'm probably wrong. But it's not a bad bet.
My only argument against that, and I'm not educated enough about the technology in those cars, but I feel like the battery life, like,
it's atrocious,
is suspect.
Yeah.
Like they just don't last and they don't hold a charge. And like, if you get into replacing batteries and shit, like
what if,
basically it counts whatever value what if
that
those things have
becomes cheaper and easier though, within the next 5 years, 10 years max, stretch it out. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I bought a first gen Leaf, but I swapped in this new battery tech. The car goes 300 miles. Like, I'm not saying we'll do that. That's pie in the sky stuff.
I thought you were going to mention like the GM EV1 because that at least has some scarcity.
Really get those. Yeah. You can't really get crushed. Yeah.
Right. Most of them are crushed. Like, and after like their lease period, like, so just after like 3 or 4 years, but like, 10 years ago, I lived in West Hollywood, and there was
really?
A dude, I had a neighbor that had one, and it was clearly he had it after whatever the lifespan of that vehicle was. And there was a Honda EV like around the same time, like around the same shape. I don't remember what it was called. Like maybe those, if you could like update the battery packs and the motors and shit, like maybe I don't see those being enthusiasts.
We had a guy who came to Autopia last winter in the original, one of the original RAV4 EVs. That, and this dude bought it new, and he loved it, and it was in literally perfect shape. And the guy was like, and I'm saying this with love and respect, delightfully crazy, like clearly loved it. So it was really interesting to talk to him about it, but he was like all in on this thing, and he was a fascinating fella, and the car was really neat. But
what's funny about those things is in Atlanta back in the 90s, the Georgia Power, our electric company, used the EV RAV4s as like the meter checker, like. So I remember like that was my first experience with an EV. I was actually like fucking around in my yard in my house in Atlanta. It has a wraparound driveway that goes around the back of the house. And it's on a super steep hill. So I'm like in the yard fucking around. I was probably like raking leaves or some shit, cause that was my job. and this fucking EV RAV4 goes silent, like didn't make a noise, like just goes up the driveway. And I'm just like, what the fuck? And like, you know, like didn't check in, didn't like say, hey, is it cool? You know, I'm going to check the meter. Like just fucking drives around the house, finds a meter, checks it, and then just fucking drives away in complete silence. And I was just like, wow, that would be so nice. Cause I had a 5.0 Mustang with no cats, Flowmasters. And I was just like, that would be so nice to sneak in and out of fucking house with. Like, you know, I couldn't sneak home or out like ever. And I was just like, that is the ticket. Like ever since then, I've been just like, EVs, like, you know, there's a place.
That's funny.
But nice. That was 30 years ago, 25 years.
It's an interesting question, Jay. We don't have a good answer for you is the short version of it. I don't have a good answer. What's your answer?
I don't know if it's a good answer, but I have an answer.
Okay.
It's just different than yours. Man, I don't
say
know.
It. If I do. It's like I mean, beer. Yeah. Say it.
I think early 2000s, AMGs and, you know, Mercedes in general, but especially like the SL55s, E55s, like they were rock bottom maybe just a couple of years ago. Like, they definitely started on the rise, but I still think you can, if your intent is to make money or add value, like I still think you can get in on those supercharged AMGs. The M cars of the same era have already exploded. I think the complexity of the Mercedes has been their downfall and the reason why they haven't just exploded. But I think you can still get them for a decent price. And most of them are low miles because they were enthusiast cars that people didn't necessarily think were collector cars, but like they just didn't drive every day. And they were their weekend car. So, you know, an AMG, I wouldn't be scared of like an S55, an E55, or an SL55 with like 75,000 miles on it. That's been maintained and driven, but
the timing of you saying that is funny because I just saw tweets like yesterday of someone pointing out a couple sales on Bring a Trailer that were like two SL55s. Be like, oh, people are finally starting to unload these, so your timing might be spot on, and you were right because we missed the boat. We should have a warehouse with 10 of these in them, because we could have back then for nothing.
For in just incrementally more money, I would try and find like a Brabus car.
Yeah,
like
that's a different game.
Brabus K8, you know, a tuned car. Not necessarily. Like I think that's still kind of under the radar because people like you could get a Brabus car with like all the mechanical upgrades and like all the power, but without the body kit and like the wheels and shit. Like, you know, most of them did do wheels, but like that's a really special car with a lot more power, and it's just a fraction more money. And it's like pretty much under the radar, but it's like, that's something that only a select few will understand. Like that K8 badge, like adds a lot of value and adds a lot of performance, but
no, your answer
doesn't add a lot of flash.
Next question with an appropriate username on Twitter at W221Enjoyer. In your opinion, what is one car that is well or perfectly suited to the media, movies, TVs, books, or songs that gave it prominence? I mean, it's hard to top the DeLorean I mentioned at the beginning, just because it was such a ridiculous choice that fit the movie so well. For what?
5-liter Mustang.
But what suited to what, though? Media, like music?
Dude, yeah. Fucking Aerosmith music videos, Menace to Society, Basic Instinct.
I was going to say Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice. Like, you know, like, love or hate any of those entities or applications. Like, the Fox Body Mustang was, like, the darling of the 80s and 90s movies. Like, Twins.
Yeah.
You remember Twins?
Was there a Fox in Twins?
It was everywhere. It was yes, that was the car that they drove, a red, white box, like my first car. Yeah. Like, it was like an 80. Yeah. Those cars were ubiquitous in media and movies back then. That's, you know, why
I'm going to go more specific. Yours is personally a good, very good, broad, all-encompassing answer. I'm going to go more specific, even from my DeLorean answer, and I'm going to go the Daytona from Miami Vice. Just because it is so perfectly suited to the scene. No. Daytona, well, I don't care if it was fake, but it was supposed to be a Daytona. So I could also argue the Ferris Bueller car, because I don't give a shit if that was fake either. It's a Daytona to me. And the Daytona, wasn't it a Daytona in like the first one? And then they didn't. And then after that, I think like initially they got a Daytona and then they needed to switch to a kit car. But the scene with In the Air Tonight, and when they're going to like kill some people and he like stops, he makes that phone call and like, oh dude, I've never even seen the series. And I've seen that scene like 100 times.
I've never watched that show, so I think I've seen that episode or that.
After like, we scene, stop recording,
I never watched the show.
We're gonna watch the scene. We just have to watch the scene, and you'll be like, "Yo, this is the shit." Bobby Reed at Bobby Reed. What is your favorite kit car? That day? No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. Technically, my heart answer is it's the car that got me into cars, because it is technically a kit car, but the Ferrari from Ferris Bueller, because the 250 GTO is I think that specific car is like the greatest car of all time. I don't know what it is about it. It's just the car that got me into cars, and I don't care that the one of the movies a kit car. So that's like my initial answer. But in general, on the playing field of current kit car stuff, especially because they are literally 5 minutes from my house, Super Performance makes the best shit. Their stuff is clean. They have the right licenses. I know they build a lot of they don't like to be called kit cars anymore, though. It's like something else. There's a different term for it now.
Right.
Factory 5 in the East Coast does sick work, too. But I'm with Super Performance. They're my neighbors. I've come to know them. They're really good people. And everything I've driven from them, even if there's been issues here and there, just because that's the nature of that beast, cars are sick and the people are great. So there you go. What about you? Do you have a favorite kit car?
I do. And it would, like, just off the cuff, I would say just Super Performance or Factory 5 Cobra. But actually, my favorite is, and I had to look it up to get the name right, but the Factory 5 the Type Daytona. 65 Coupe, which is basically their Daytona Coupe. There was only six of those cars. Like, they're all worth tens of millions of dollars. Like that's something. Oh, well, we can.
I'm trying to figure out if it was the Vette that was five of, or the Daytona they were five of.
I feel like six was a number, but
because you went more specific with a model, which I like, because my favorite model for a long time with Super Performance was the Daytona. And they get the license, so they get away with calling it a Daytona, whereas factory has to call it a Type 65. Same. I've driven both of them, actually, and they're both great. That was my favorite, especially being, you know, more of a Ford fan in general, until I drove their the Super Performance Grand Sport. Fuck. That was the unbelievable. I still think the Daytona, if you had to, like, have one as a daily driver, which is, like, a dream of mine, because it's ridiculous. Because it's not. It would be the best to, like, show up to things, Starbucks drive-thrus, blah, 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 you know, like the side pipes. That Corvette was absolutely just, I drove two of them, and one had the correct, you can get it with the correct size they built back in the day. No. The Corvette had it was smaller than that. It was like a 370 something weird. Yeah, it's like some weird size. Oh, really? And then I drove one with like an LS, like an LSA or something, you know, like some modern shit. Yeah, LS3 would be fine, dude. 400 horse would be fine in that. Oh, okay.
The way the LS7 revs out and like. I don't know. I love that motor. And I think in any sort of Corvette, I think it's like the perfect power plant just because their weight, their dynamics.
377. Why is that? Yeah, it was original Grand Sport 377. What's that?
The original Grand Sport? Yeah. I swear they were 427s, but
they were like, yeah, it was, they had all aluminum 377 small block. Yeah. And this, you can get a super performance car. Sure. What's that?
The competition there?
I believe it was, yes.
That was the competition, like the original
Grand Sport. And Super Performance will sell you it with basically that. You can get that as a crate engine from GM is what it is. You don't have to get it through Super Performance. GM sells that. Yeah. Myron Vernis has a great question. For those who don't know, Myron is an amazing collector in the Midwest with just ridiculous cars. A very nice gentleman. His question is, when will cool Japanese cars have permanent place during Monterey Car Week? It should have happened by now on some level. But if it doesn't happen within the next 6 years, I'd be shocked. Like, you know, the first ones will be like, what the fuck is that? The 2000 GT, but then they need to fast forward to like,
right.
I was going to say first gen NSXs and stuff, you know, like the two, like, yeah. I don't know.
She was cool in like the late 60s. Japanese cars are super cool in the late 60s, early 70s. And then not really again until the mid 90s. So there needs to be like Legends of the Autobahn for Japanese cars. Because the GTR values are there. Like, you can't deny their collectability. You can't deny their value, their exclusivity. So there should be an event. Somebody should create an event celebrating Japanese cars of the 60s, 70s.
There probably 85. Is, just not that we've seen. Like, probably, you know, yeah, we need NSUs and Princes and Centuries. And there is, it's funny because there is stuff from the 80s that you and I would like, but it's not Monterey Car Week ready. You know, like Z31s are going to be on the fucking lawn at Pebble Beach. But some of that 60s era stuff that like has to be, and if they don't put it there, I'll be happy to go up there and call them all racist, rich fucks. I'm fine to do that. Fuck them. Fuck Pebble Beach. Myron, we'll do our own show, buddy. Just let me know. No, I can be mad. I'll fuck that place. I played golf there once. I didn't play well. Fuck them. I think I shot a 112. Whatever. Fuck that place. No, I've actually never been to Monterey Car Week. I just want to go
It's fun. I mean, I have
right, we've even talked
the
about
most
that. That's
racist
right.
shit in my life. But that experience aside, like, it is a pretty inclusive and a pretty cool weekend, like, for car guys. Like, I've had some of the best times with my car industry friends in the last 6-7 years at Monterey Car Week. But, like, you know, that's due to the company and the people that I associate with. Like, you know, I could have gone with a different group of people and had the worst
fucking
time ever.
No, I want to go. It always lines up with a trip I do back east to see my close high school, middle school friends, or usually it does. It's the middle of summer. Kids got a lot going on, or it will be the middle of summer. So I've never been. I've just never been to Monterey Car Week. I want to go for the historics. I want to camp at Laguna. I want to drive my Montero up and camp there.
It's the best.
Fuck no.
No. Not on a rooftop.
Better than a Kyrie Irving shirt, though. Dan Mosqueda at Moscovich. We're shopping for a new car. It's our family practical car. Looking at Ford Bronco Sport, the Badlands, a Subaru USA, Forester, or Outback. Subaru USA, because he tagged them. Subaru, Forester, or Outback. I want the turbo engine. Maybe an equivalent Volvo. I'm concerned about having a good dealer. Thoughts? There are no good dealers. Which isn't true, but...
Yeah.
I really like the Badlands Bronco Sport, but like every single Ford dealer on the planet's like, hey, give us more money than what they said they cost. Dan and I have conversed many times, but Dan messaged me and said the Subaru dealers is selling them at sticker. So my gut says, I don't know. That's a good question. I would never, I'm probably never going to buy a new car for me. Like my wife will get a new car at some point down the road. We don't need one because, you know, the CX-5 is fine even at 80,000 miles, and she drives less anyway. I'm probably never getting a new car unless I, you know, win the lottery, and then I can just supplement my dumb car buying with like an electric Porsche on the side or a Range Rover or something. But I would never pay a dealer markup. I know they're everywhere, but I would just never do it. I would never do it. I know someone who is trying to buy a very in-demand German sports car. And they've bought German sports cars in the past. And they know people who are work on the marketing and media side of the company they're trying to buy from. I don't want to get too specific, but you guys can all do the fucking math, read between the lines. They put X down. They had an agreement. He called about it. They canceled his agreement. They still have his money, and they wanted to pay another X, like a 2X multiple of his deposit. And he's like, no. And his wife's like, just pay it. And he's like, no. He's like, well, then get the deposit back. He's like, no, I'm going to win this. And I don't think he is, because this car, they can find another buyer in a heartbeat. But I appreciate him standing firm. But it also sucks. It sucks that he had, it sucks that he was like, yeah, I'll buy it. Here's X money. Let me know when it's ready. And they're like, well, here's the deal. It's like, that sucks, man. Like, the car said it cost this.
I mean, listen, I get it. Like, you know, people put deposits on wheels, and we've had, you know, price increases on raw materials, on everything. You know, when things get delayed months, you kind of have to accept price increases.
The manufacturer increasing the price. The manufacturer hasn't increased the price of the car. The intermediary has. That's the difference.
That's the difference. That's what I'm saying. Like the dealer thinking that they need to make increased profits because of decreased sales.
Yes.
Is a tough pill to swallow. If the manufacturer actually raised MSRP, that would be one thing. But if the MSRP remains the same and the dealer's, you know, adding on, you know, X percentage of value and you're not really getting that value, then I wouldn't play that game either. I would hold firm
It's funny too, because you can think of crazy arguments for the flip side of it as well, because like he could probably turn around and then even if he paid the extra, make money on the car, you know? He does want the car. He wants to drive it. He's going to put miles on it.
And that's why I know there's plenty of people that will accept those markups, and you know, they'll enjoy the car for just a couple months or whatever, and then flip it and make money themselves. So I don't have sympathy for those people, but I do have sympathy for the people that have agreed on a price, ordered a car, want a car,
it's like Bronco people.
Want to enjoy it.
It's like
want
Bronco
to
people.
Keep it.
Like,
and then
they saw this come out and they're like, oh my God, I want this. Right. And dealer's like, you need to give us an extra, like, insane amount of money. And it's crazy. It's going to happen when the Z lands. It's going to happen. You know, it sucks. People are like, oh my God, this car is coming out. Like when the GR Corolla, it's a fucking Corolla, but it is an exciting one, whether you believe it or not, it is an exciting one. And there was actually supposed to be another question that I missed on the Corolla in the backup of the Instagram. What's up with the GR Corolla Maritzo edition? We don't know yet. We'll talk about it next week. I'm sorry, because it came out today and I didn't do a lot of research, except it has like 100 less pounds and more torque, and it sounds interesting. We'll get into it next week.
Let's get into it.
So the it sucks if it's a regular ish car, like high end stuff. It sucks. It's annoying. It's frustrating, even for those people, when they're like, "Oh, you want a G class? It's another 150." And those people are like, "Okay, so like, you know what? Then fuck that. If you're gonna pay that, then fuck you. You could have just gone and bought a Navigator and been fine."
Yep.
That's a damn good looking car too.
You could have bought a Urus, whatever. Like, that's how you choose your money. You value fashion over actual value. Like, you've got to have, you got to show up in this.
But the Bronco buyer, for the most part, was like, this is so cool. I never wanted a Jeep, but I want this. And then, I mean, it didn't help that the rollout for that car, the timing was the worst with every supply chain going down. Yeah. Like, that should have been the most successful rollout in like Ford's history outside of the 1964 and a half Mustang. But whatever. It's hard to blame Ford for that's a global thing, but you can blame the fucking dealers. Bradley Brownell, BC Brownell. If you went to a car museum, would you rather see a lot of cars you've never seen before or recognizable icons? For those of you who don't know, Brad's new job is the director of the Crawford Auto and Aviation Museum. Yeah, give it up for Brad. It's a hell of a position. I want to see both. If that makes sense. I want to see cars I've never seen before, and I want to see some recognizable stuff thrown in, but I am more interested in the stuff I haven't seen before, but I would like a few things sprinkled in that I know.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to answer that because my taste in cars is like pornography. It's just like, I don't get excited by seeing F40s, which it would be like, for lack of a better reference, like
a horrible reference,
right? Like,
how dare you do that to the Ferrari F40?
I mean, isn't that, come on? But it's like, it's something that an entire generation lusted after, and like, you saw it everywhere. It was just like the most ubiquitous poster car, like F40 Countach. Like, that was what our generation, like a good 15-year span, like that's what we like had posters of, yeah, and just wanted to see and experience, right? And I, you know, if I see one of those in a museum, okay, like seeing them on all the right street is a completely different saying case. Like, I love to see them being used and hear them and experience them, but like to just see them static on display like that, I'm gonna walk right past that. I want to see the weird shit that like I've never experienced. Like, I loved at the Peterson a couple years ago, they had like basically, wow, it was like an exotics of the pre-war era. So it was like Voss
Delahaye's
and like, you know, Bugattis and like
just Art Deco like shit.
Yeah, extravagant. Exactly. And it was just like, we will never see this. Nobody's ever pulling up to Cars and Coffee in this shit. And like, I don't know anything about them, and it's exciting for me to learn about not only the technology that was involved in these cars, but like, you know, the design ethos, the, you know, right, the cultural influence of these cars. It's like, you know, most of these cars are made in France, a lot were made in England, some were made in the US. And it's just like, you know, the different ways that these cars were manufactured and rebodied. And, you know, you take a Rolls-Royce chassis and you'd send that to almost anywhere in the world and have a body manufacturer build you a custom
right
body.
Like, right. Nobody does that. Imagine and if they
that
did
shit today. I buy a Rolls Royce ghost chassis, and then I fucking take the whole fucking body off, and I have my boy
Italy
in fucking Italy, wherever.
I'll be in Italy.
Like, you know, Huntington Beach. I have a guy in Italy. I have a guy in New York. Fucking build me a bespoke.
Yeah, but then you wind up with Will I
Am. Exist anymore, and like those are.
Fuck. No, because what I was gonna say, I wasn't gonna just fully bag on Will I Am, because you know what? I almost feel bad for the dude because the two cars he's shown are fucking atrocious, terrible cars. But I feel like he's true. Like, he doesn't have anybody in his corner to be like, yo, let's just fix a few things. And he's passionate.
Right.
Yeah.
He's got yes man. He's surrounded by yes man. And I had an experience in working with Will.i.am, and we actually declined to complete the vehicle. Like, this is too far beyond like anything that we would associate ourselves with. And I'm not going to name names, but this car ended up getting built.
Fucking DeLorean?
And it ended up being as atrocious as
this is a DeLorean, we imagined. Right?
We're just like, man, this thing is just too far beyond. No, it was not. But the car came to us, and it was basically a body on chassis, but the body was one piece. And like, that's not sustainable. And it was also based on a Volkswagen Bug chassis, and that's not sustainable for a custom car. It's just like, yo, man, we need to cut this thing into pieces in order to keep it from fucking flexing and basically destroying itself. Like,
right.
Every time you enter a driveway or hit a bump on the road, like, this is not a car. Like, this is a sculpture and not how cars are built. And to do this right, we would basically just have to cut this thing apart and completely rebuild it from scratch. And unless you're interested in doing that, like, we're not interested in the project. And it went down the road to somebody else, and it got built, and it is basically a sculpture. I don't know if that car has ever been driven and, you know, enjoyed, but it's on display in a showroom, and it's just not something, me personally, that I was ever interested in being a part of. It's like, I'll take your money and build this car, but like, what do you want from it? How do you want to enjoy it? You actually want to drive it? Well, that will never happen.
Like, I just figured out the title for this episode.
And it's not even
put it in. You can see it later when it goes live. I like that I can add it, because I couldn't do that before, because I used to add it when I would take notes and add it in later. Then I'd forget what the fuck I wanted to do, but now I can add it right into the dashboard, which is handy dandy. That's all our questions for tonight. We've covered a lot of good shit. We're going to get off the air so that I can show Ron one of the greatest scenes in television of a show that I've never watched anything else about. And I think in the first two seasons, they actually used a Daytona. Right, I thought I saw some pop up. Thank you for listening. Go to Blipshift and buy some shirts and stickers. Go to Wheel Pros and buy some fucking wheels. Or don't. Go to 777 Style if you want to follow Mr. Ron on Instagram. I'm at Hooniverse Jeff. Go to the YouTube channel, like and subscribe. Go to the Hooniverse podcast channel specifically. Yeah.
Please.
I don't know if I need to say like and leave a review on like Apple iTunes anymore. We used to have to do that, and I think it mattered. But people used to, and it used to be important. And I think it might still be, because we've fallen off a cliff on Apple. So if anybody's listening and wants to, if you try it, I would appreciate it. I don't know if you can do that on Spotify.
It's usually the link that I share, but I don't see where you can
You used to be able to. I don't know. We have like a shitload of older reviews where like half of them, most of them were great, and every now and then they'd be complaining, and it was hilarious shit, but not wrong. But that's it for us. We will see you all next week. Bye.